Welcome to another edition of, I don't even remember what the hell this thing's called. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jim
Pete. Your hair has grayed a little bit since the last time we talked.
Yes, it has. Did you not see, since the last we podded, did you not see what happened? Come on, man. All right.
I don't know. The election seemed to go well. I don't know.
Well,
there's a whole Indians thing. But I don't
know. We got to start off with politics. Yeah. This is not going. This is going. Oh. All right. So.
Everybody shut off their phones.
All right. So as we head into the 2018-2019 hot stove season, we decided today. We got on the bat phone. Mike called me up and he said, you know, the Indians made a huge deal today. We should pod about that. So we're here to talk all about the Eric Gonzalez trade with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Gage, go. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Okay. On the reels, though, I was like so excited. How interesting is this centerpiece outfielder from the Pirates?
I have no idea, but while you're talking about how awesome it is, I'm going to look him up right now.
Okay. Gage, make the pitch because I really like him.
He's got some plate discipline. He's shown some nice stuff against righties in the minors. He's only got what, a couple hundred MLB plate.
So,
I don't know what happened. You just sounded like a robot. You repeated like 8 times, and we still have no idea what you just said. So you got to say it again.
It's pretty apropos for this trade.
Well, he's a baseball player.
So
without even looking him up, did we not trade for Oscar Mercado from the St. Louis Cardinals? Do we not have 17 center fielders now? Sorry.
So he's a corner at least, right? He's a corner platoon.
The story of our lives. He might be a corner platoon.
Okay. So here's the deal. I get really invested in like the small stupid stuff. Like, you know, like this is like a really small stupid thing. He's got great play discipline. He makes a bunch of contact and he's shown a ton of power and he's hit at every level in the minors and he can play the corners. And it's like, I don't know. Would I rather try and see if he can make it than Tyler Naquin next year? Yeah. Probably.
Will they? I'm sorry. You can probably see where this is going for me today.
But Jim,
we got rid of Eric Gonzalez.
We traded the great Eric Gonzalez.
That's where it begins, and that's where it ends with me. I, to be fair, if we get anything out of trading Eric Gonzalez, I'm ecstatic. So if we can throw some guy out there, it's great. I don't know. They just looked him up. He looked fine.
All right, let's air some grievances now. Gage, air some grievances.
The Luplo thing is like cashing in a $1 lottery ticket with Gonzalez for a $5 lottery ticket. It's nothing sexy, but it's interesting.
I think that's a great, great way to summarize it. Eric Gonzalez is never going to have a place on this team of any value. He's like his biggest value is that he can play short as a util guy, and you don't ever want him on the field. Basically, and like you have Yu Chang, who like even if we really disagree about Yu Chang as to whether he's like a long-term bench piece or maybe a starter, I think it's like pretty clear his ceiling is much higher, and he's a better fit for the Indians as that like sort of like rotational infielder.
I mean, I think we can all agree there that he's at least worth a look, and now at least he has a clear shot at getting said look. I mean. There's the guy with power that can't hurt. So I don't know. I guess as we wheedle through this podcast, we can talk about what this team might look like next year, because I still don't. I've heard so many different things about this offseason. They're not going to spend. Today I hear that some like made up like world somewhere. Apparently Antonetti said that they were going to not trade anyone and add salary. So with all of that being said, let's just start with this. Corey Kluber, third in Cy Young today. Obviously, most everybody in this podcast probably would love to see him dealt for the right pieces. Let's talk about that. So, Mike, we'll start with you. It's your birth. Now, when you hear this, it won't be your birthday, but right now it's your birthday. That's how dedicated we are. We scheduled this on Sunday. Nobody except for Mike, he might not even have known it was his birthday on Sunday. He's that old.
But it's true.
On your birthday, tell us about Corey Kluber. Before we get into the specifics about like where he could go or what we could get back with him, talk about why Kluber for you, if Kluber's the guy you'd want to trade, if you have to trade one of these starting pitchers. Let's just start there, and we'll kind of dive down this rabbit hole for the next few minutes about perhaps where he could go and what we can get back.
Yeah.
I did start with you for a reason, because you and I have been down this rabbit hole like the past 7 seasons.
I will say at mid-season this year, I was like, you know, it'd be really interesting as if the Indians to sort of like reset this window and put themselves in better shape for the next 3 years traded Corey Kluber. So I will say that I've weirdly been on the in favor of this for a while. It's sucky. It sucks for the fans, and I'm a fan. I don't know if I'm a I hated watching them this year, and they had great players, so I'm not a good fan. It sucks. I just don't want to watch the same team go back. And I don't want to watch them go back with like your oldest starting pitcher a year older. And I just think this rotation has reached the point where I really don't want Kluber being one of the guys who pitches 2 games in a playoff series. Like, he's just not there in this rotation anymore. And that may be nuts. It may be too high on Carrasco and Bauer. But that's like where I am, and sort of like once he reached that spot for me, I became much more comfortable with the idea of trying to like reallocate those resources to the outfield.
Gage.
Not to mention he's the most I go back and forth here, but he's the most expensive one of the trio. And I like Hattery, I think Bauer and Carrasco probably are better next year. But still, I'm at the point where I only trade Kluber and you can get an outfield piece that can help you win right now with a window of more than a couple of years. And maybe that's too high of an ask because of some of the peripherals and just the general sense of where Kluber's been going, even though he had a great year. But if you could get a Cody Bellinger, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Well, that would be threading the needle, like getting Bellinger. I think the key with a Kluber trade is having to thread said needle, because I think when you trade a guy like Kluber, most often you're getting a prospect package back. I mean, in reality, you know, do you get a Bellinger back in a deal like that? Or I mean, I get it. You know, team like the Dodgers, team like the Yankees, Braves have been mentioned. Some other teams have been mentioned. There's obviously deals to be made. But you know, are there other Bellinger like deals out there where we can thread a needle? Because if you deal Kluber and you don't get back, and this is, you know, this is irregardless of, you know, where he's going in the future. If you base it on where he's at right now and his trade value and trade and the assets you can acquire, I mean, it's going to be really tough to thread a needle and get a deal that's a PR hit and an on the field hit. Now, obviously, I think the three of us probably care less about the PR, but you know, what are the thread the needle deals out there, Mike? Is there, you know, Gage, you mentioned Bellinger, and that was probably the one deal that I've heard mentioned that I thought was threading the needle, because everything else seems to be kind of outlandish to me, or kind of a dart at a dartboard that you can't see, where you're still getting prospects. And while people say can't miss about prospects, we're Cleveland Indians fans, so we know what that means. Mike, what are some thread the needle deals out there for you? Or do you care less about threading the needle with a guy like Kluber?
No, you have to. You know what just is so dumb is that we have to like thread the needle after we've threaded the needle for 5 years. Like, we threaded the needle to get Corey Kluber into a Cy Young Award winner, who then we're playing way below market rate. And then we did that with Carrasco and Clevenger, and we threaded the needle on Bauer. Oh, Ramirez and Lindor, at the same time, they're in their peaks for super cheap. We threaded the needle there. The Indians are this, like, massive, almost, like, cosmological mess of threading the needle. And yet, we have to shed salary when we have a middle-of-the-league payroll and everything went right. That's so dumb. Like, that sucks so much. So either Major League Baseball is broken, the Dolans aren't holding up their end of the bargain. And you know what else sucks? I really hate that the press carries the water. I think there are really good ways to defend the Dolans. I think the Dolans have been great owners for Cleveland. They don't dive into the syntax to rebuild their stadium. They've extended the life of their stadium. They're bringing an all-star game there when, like, they could have fought for a new stadium while other teams are building them. Atlanta got one and their stadium was younger. You know, I've seen Paul Dolan do awesome things in the community. But, like, good God, why does Buster Olney have to carry the water for the Indians management when they're going to, like, cut salary? And everything has gone right to get us to this point, to have a dominant position in a crappy division, and we're talking about trading a great player on a cheap deal among a bunch of other great players on cheap deals so that we can get better. It sucks.
What's funny to me is I have these nightmares about the Kansas City Royals after they won the World Series and they started down that rabbit hole of dealing players. The funny thing is the Indians have Lindor and Ramirez for at least 3 more years. And shouldn't we be the Royals the year that they just started doing insane things to bring players there so they could win the World Series? I guess, Gage, you know, I know you know what I think about the Kluber deal, because we haven't really got into it, and I don't really feel like getting into it with you guys. Like, I got plenty of people online to argue with, aside from two guys that I actually get along with. But, you know, I guess my take on this, Gage, has always been, you know, our front office is spectacular. You know, I think that. But when we get to a point like this where we're almost forced to deal the and I don't want to say the only asset that we have, but certainly the biggest depth that we have to acquire the thread the needle asset this year. You know, when you know, what is the accountability of the Indians organization? You know, again, perhaps you acquire this sort of pitching depth to eventually try to move it around and try to maybe tilt assets in other areas. But, you know, where are you at with overall with the general feeling, you know, that we're maybe forced to deal a Kluber, a Carrasco, who, you know, I mean, 32, 31, we're both heading obviously towards, you know, a different stage of their career. But should the Indians, I mean, shouldn't this be the year, you know, I guess we say this every year, but shouldn't this be the year where the Indians maybe don't put it out there that we're going to be shedding payroll and maybe make one splash season where we just start bringing in like ridiculous players or maybe at the deadline bring in something ridiculous like Cueto with the Royals a few years back. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing darts here and I don't know what the Indians ultimately are going to do, Gage, but where are you at with all this? I mean, you know, is there something else they might be able to do or do they have to move a Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer to get rid of a Kipnis, Encarnacion, Yonder Alonso?
That's where it kind of sours me on the front office in general. And free agency is a crapshoot. But even going, I was pumped about the Edwin signing. Pumped and a great deal. He's been fine. It's been a fine deal mostly. But
But that's still they put us in a position to not like that deal, even though I think all three of us in one way or another liked it.
Yeah, but if you're as capped as they're leaking into the media, it sucks. I mean, if that locks up $20 million out of your 60 or whatever their payroll is, if that's 13% of your payroll, that deal sucks.
Yeah,
but and then you go back to like the Yonder Alonso, which was a fine flyer, but then again, looking at it in the scope of, hey, that's 5% of our payroll. It's just sour. I don't know how else to put it. There's something that they need to hit on something soon to make next season interesting.
Well, the Yonder Alonso flyer's fine, except for, you know, we talked about other guys they probably could have acquired that you didn't have to sign for 2 years that maybe didn't have as high a potential upside as Yonder Alonso could have had. I guess my question about Alonso, and we even talked about this then, you know, you get a guy for 2 years and if he doesn't pay out, then you're stuck with him at the position, which we're basically looking at now when we do actually have some other options to put in there. And then with Encarnacion, you know, we've talked about some really unique ways they could use that DH position over the years. And he again, you know, we've had lots worse at the DH position. So it just stinks that we're looking to shed salary there. So okay. Why Kluber over Carrasco? I know obviously we saw velocity dip. We keep talking about the age of Kluber, but you know, Carrasco's less than a year younger than him.
Like Carrasco's kept it going better. That he looks stronger. And the numbers kind of back it up to me at least. The Kluber strikeout drop terrifies the living hell out of me for next year. I don't know what you think about that front, Hattery. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm scared. I've been scared about Kluber for a while and been wrong before.
But in fairness, I think the first time we had this conversation, Mike, it legitimately, I said 7 years ago, that was not true. But I'm pretty sure the year after we won the first Cy Young, we had a 35-minute podcast in which I may have deleted it. I'm not sure.
I don't want to hear it.
I'm pretty sure we were talking about the velocity dip then, too. Obviously, 4 years later, it's a lot more realistic than it was 4 years ago. But anyways, I digress. I do want to hear your guys. I'm trying to get you guys to get me on this wave because, as you know, I've been kind of non-existent online of late.
That sucks. I mean, the reason I like Carrasco better is I have some theories that are stupid. One of them being that I think what you saw was I think you need elite stuff in the playoffs. Like, I think command control guys who can really carve up young teams and, like, rack up, like, really great overall season numbers. But if you have, like, a command control guy like Kluber, who I think that's just sort of what he is. I think he's transitioned to a Cliff Lee portion of his career where everything's, like, 92, and he has really nice breaking balls and he commands them very well. But like once I just think that there are these like gaps, and I think, you know, he's someone who his command will dominate every team with youngish hitters. But when you're facing an incredibly well-prepared Astros team, it's just really different. Whereas Carrasco can still run it up 95, 96 from a pure stuff standpoint. He's awesome. And I think that just plays up more in the playoffs. I think the playoffs are a little different. And so for me, I just want Carrasco and Bauer starting 4 or 5 games in the playoffs. And if Kluber goes to Clevinger, that's a gap. I mean, you're downgrading there. I'll totally admit it. But if you're buying me a good outfield bat, that might be hidden. It sucks. I hate this so much. I hate the Indians.
So Gage, I've loved Carrasco for a long time, but you obviously have been on the Carrasco train. I mean, obviously his velocity is right now is much better than Kluber's. I mean, why aren't we looking at a potential drop for Carrasco? I mean, obviously less innings over his career and spread out over a longer period of time. But with him maybe starting to rack up some high inning seasons, I mean, realistically, I mean, how many seasons are we looking at with Carrasco? I mean, if it's me and I'm another team, I mean, Carrasco's the guy I'm probably looking at first. So how bad a deal would it be if we did deal Carrasco?
It depends on the return, and it would have to be a crazy great return for me to be crazy about it. But Carrasco, I just think he holds up better, or his profile does going into next year. And we all know how wrong that could be. But he induces ground balls. He strikes people out, and he's got a nasty off-speed, solid slider. Like Hattery said, he just knows to get people to swing this and drive the ball into the ground. And he's just – maybe it's a little bias as well because aesthetically he's just a lot of fun to watch pitch, for me at least.
All right, so you mentioned Bellinger. You mentioned Bellinger. Without really talking about necessarily the pitcher who we're going to deal away – Mike, why don't you guys throw some names out there that interest you? Has there been any deals that you've seen that are realistic and B, that can add immediate value to the Cleveland Indians this year? I mean, obviously the best deal out there is to trade Kluber to the Yankees for the guys that we traded for Miller, right?
I think so. I haven't seen any I've really liked. The Braves one I saw, I think, was interesting from a – I think there's, like, we get paralyzed with how we evaluate baseball trades. And like, we're always looking at like, are you getting a dollar for a dollar, and not like, are you getting 90 cents for a dollar, but that 90 cents helps your team a lot. Like, a lot of times it's about the marginal value gaps of the players you're acquiring in terms of the players they're replacing on your team. Like, I think the Braves had that really, there's that really interesting, like, Christian Pash, Austin Riley, Tuki Toussaint, which is interesting because Toussaint helps the pen. Riley is a great third base ready prospect, but then Diaz is basically irrelevant. I'm not sure the marginal value gap is huge there. Then Ramirez is at second. Kipnis is an outfielder. You have a whole mess. You're not getting an outfielder that's a starting caliber player. I honestly am a little lower on Christian Pash than other people. I know his defense is amazing, but I don't bet on defense from single and double A players. Like, I just don't want to do that. The Yankees don't make sense to me. I don't get it. Like, everybody wants us to add Andujar in a deal. I don't. If the Indians come out of a Kluber trade with just like a solid third baseman, they really screwed up, right? It has to be the Dodgers. This deal has to be the Dodgers, or maybe like backseat Brewers or Cardinals, I think, are way more realistic. I think the Cardinals are like way more likely than people think. I think Harrison Bader and like another piece would be a really interesting package. I just think there's just no way in hell it's going to be. I'll bet the Cardinals make the most sense to me, and I think that's low-key the most likely location.
Well, I mean, obviously we've had lots of dealings with the Cardinals in the past. They're obviously people we've talked to and made lots of deals with. So, I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, you mentioned Bellinger. Makes a lot of sense. Does it make a lot of sense, Gage? I mean, sell me on this. Like, is this something you just kind of put together, or did you see this somewhere that can make it even more tasty?
I didn't see it anywhere, but you know the Dodgers are going to be in on Harper, and they already have 17 outfielders. So always. You don't see swaps at the major league level between contenders like that very often, but that might be the one scenario where it would make sense. They have Muncy at first base. They have Puig, who is a player, Chris Taylor, and then going out and getting another – if they were to land Bryce Harper, then Bellinger or somebody of that ilk becomes – or even Chris Taylor, they become really interesting pieces in that type of deal. So the Dodgers can use their money to wield depth and acquire talent that way too. And I hadn't really even thought about the Cardinals, but if you're going to get a guy like Harrison Bader, then that is a top prospect but hasn't really proven himself 100%, I feel like there's got to be a high-level prospect behind him in that trade too.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think there's lots to play out here. I don't think people have not. I mean, I'd be curious to see who's called. I'm sure lots of teams have called, but I'm starting, you know, percent chance guys, you know, as we kind of wrap up the Kluber talk, percent chance that we see Kluber, the 2-time Cy Young Award winner for the Indians, playing in Cleveland next year. I would have said 75%. I might be lower than that. I might be like 40% right now. I kind of think that it's been fished out there around enough that we're probably going to see him dealt. So I'm going 40%. He's with the Indians next year. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's below 50%. I thought, I know he deleted this, but Bauer said something about how it made sense for the Indians to trade Kluber. And I think he's an idiot. Even though he's so much smarter than the rest of us.
Oh my gosh.
Because he kind of finished college and stuff. Whatever. I'm not going to. Whatever. But no, I think there is something fascinating in what Bauer said. I think that it's probably reflective of the locker room understanding the position the Indians are in, and the Indians being honest. I think the Indians have a tendency to be very honest with their players about like what they're evaluating, and have them prepared for being moved. And I think there's an extent to which like some players expect some upheaval and some changes because they understand the dynamic. And I think Bauer is sort of representative of that when he went on his large arbitration and 1-year deal and I'm smarter than you kick. So I think that's very, it's very I just think it's really likely. I mean, we just have seen way more public buzz about this than usual. Like, usually it's like Evan Grant or Bob Nightingale or some jackass who doesn't know anything is like, oh, teams are calling the Indians. When Buster Olney is rolling out, like, Kluber's on the market and being discussed, he rolls out the financial basis. To me, that's the Indians putting out the feelers that this is going to happen.
And Gager hasn't been, I mean, there really hasn't been a whole lot of blowback. It seems like there's, where normally you'd see kind of this like 75%, what the hell are you doing? 25%, you know, super smarks, like saying they should deal him. It does seem to be like a balance kind of don't trade him kind of thing. Maybe it makes sense. Like where are you at with this percentage and some insight there?
To the public saying, "Eh, is playoffs." I mean, I think people let that stick in their head. In the last 2 years, has been just a disaster for the Indians and especially Kluber. But I don't want to jump to, like, I'm not on that side. I'm not saying that he's not good. I just don't think he's as good as he once was. And if you can get a team to pay for what he was last year before the playoffs from June to September, one of the best stretches of from any pitcher I've ever seen in 2017, pay for that, then it makes a ton of sense to me.
All right.
Can I jump in for two seconds? I think that's a great point. I think Kluber's like last 2 years of playoff performances have given the Indians a ton of cover. And I don't think that, I think he's still a really good pitcher and I don't think they're his fault. I think just like weird stuff. And I think he's probably been overpitched, something that Jim hammered on all year this year, that it never feels like he's entered the playoffs close to 100%. I mean, not never, but the last two playoffs. So I think there's an extent to which the Indians have a ton of cover because he really struggled in the playoffs.
And I just don't think there's, you know, as I sit here and I thought about, you know, perhaps there's a way you can sort of shelve him a little bit throughout the year and get him ready for the playoffs. I think there's, for whatever reason, whether you think it's a Francona issue or maybe it's a Kluber issue himself, I just don't see the Indians ever being the team to say, you know, maybe this year we won't let you throw 250 innings. Maybe we'll let you throw 180. Just seems like he's just going to get overused in Cleveland no matter what. I mean, so I'll just leave it at that. Let's talk Bauer really quickly. I just want to talk about using him in 2019 and kind of, you know, as he's flying around on Twitter this offseason quite a bit. He mentioned, you know, pitching for a team at some point and pitching every fourth day, making that $43 million that he thinks he's going to get, making it kind of make sense. Is there a chance with the Indians that we see, especially if they deal, let's say they deal Kluber, is there a chance that we see maybe the Indians with kind of surprisingly Carl Willis looking at the pitching game a lot differently, I think, than all three of us thought when they signed him? I mean, is there a potential for the Indians to use Bauer in unique ways next year? I mean, it seems like they're willing to do that with him based on just who he is. Are we going to get to see maybe a different Bauer this year and that the Indians utilize him differently, or are they worried about the injury risk as probably they should?
Holy hell. That's amazing. That's such a good question. No, because like, what if you? Sorry, Gage. It's really your turn to talk, but I'm a narcissist.
It's your birthday, man. It's your birthday. You got.
But no, how fascinating is it to alternate? So you go like, Gage is off.
You pissed Gage off, dude. He just left.
I feel bad. Guy wanted to pod for weeks. Just leaving podcast
now. Either that or he had Mexican food today, and he had to go to the bathroom.
Guy has kids, so I mean, I'm sure. No, but I. What if you just do the, like, Bauer pitches every fourth day and every fifth day in this set? So you, like, he pitches – one set he pitches on the fifth day and you have Plutko in as an opener. And then the next day he pitches on the fourth day, and you just go with some other random like opener or bullpen day based on how you construct the schedule. But the point is, my dog is barking very loudly because she misses me. But the second point is, I think this is a great plan. Why this is amazing. Bauer would love it. You don't go to the full risk of the like every fourth day. Like, that's awesome.
Well, when you toss in off days into that, I mean, fourth days often look like fifth days anyway. So I think doing that alternate, I mean, I didn't even think of that. But it seems like we always come up with these unique ways to use starters, and then the Indians don't do it, and then the Rays and like Brewers do it instead. Gage, I mean, Carl Willis, I mean, I will flat out admit I was flat out wrong about the guy at the beginning of the season. I mean, he's definitely a guy who's measuredly changed his tactics over the years, especially since his last tenure with the Indians. I mean, he does seem like a pitching coach who will utilize pitchers in unique ways. I mean, are we in this Francona era? Are we likely to see that uniquely used pitcher? I mean, they clearly were ready to use Bauer uniquely in the playoffs. And I know the Indians look at the playoffs vastly different than the regular season. They shouldn't, but they do. I mean, they should. But there's definitely scenarios in the regular season that they can mess with. Mike's idea is a fantastic one. You know, do they utilize Bauer differently next year?
I'm still skeptical about next year, but let's do it in 2020.
Whenever Francona isn't manager anymore and we have someone who likes to try innovative things.
Oh, God. This is a scary rabbit hole that we're on the precipice of.
No, I want to get back to Carl Willis.
Thank you. I just had the Francona conversation this afternoon with someone at work, and I sounded like a raving lunatic. And at the end of it, he said, "Why would you want to trade Frank? Or why would you want to get rid of Francona?" And I was like, oh, God. I thought he was on our side. Sorry, go ahead, Carl Willis. I don't want to go down here.
Okay, well, I pissed on the Carl Willis thing last year. I did. And then you read the quotes from him after the playoffs were over, and this dude's like some intellectual, really bought into the analytics. I can't remember the guy's name in Boston, but they have that the guy that they lean that – Dombrowski leans on heavily for analytics. I'm blanking completely. Brian Bannister. Yeah. And Willis was talking about how much he bent Bannister's ear. And I was just floored reading some of the comments from Willis after those playoff series, because you didn't really hear about that much during the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, the only things we've ever seen about Carl Willis publicly is prior to this is, you know, just kind of the regular, you know, the guy who was here, you know, in his prior pitching coach tenure. So, I mean, Mike, I mean, I didn't realize what he had said until I think I saw you tweeting about it. You know, on a level of surprise, you had to be pretty high. I mean, but is it possible that Francona accidentally hired an analytics guy?
I think so. I remember I saw that article that David Larilla wrote up interviewing Willis, and Larilla's awesome. He does really great work at Fangraphs, just like interviewing smart people and letting them talk. So drop to him for the five people that made it this far in the podcast. But I think, I just remember DMing Adam Burke and being like, hey, you should read this article, because I always read Larilla. And I expected it to open and just like a couple of pedantic reference to analytics and it being done. And Willis had really thoughtful comments about distilling concepts and preparing pitchers that weren't just like your like random polls, but were pretty nuanced. And Jim just left. But I'm going to leave Gage sort of like drop his thoughts. Do we need other changes in the coaching staff? Do we need to get it somehow younger?
I just don't even know how one of us evaluates what assistant coaches or bench coaches are doing. Everybody falls under the Francona umbrella. Like, I mean, what's Ty Van Berkelio? I can't really comment on what he's doing. It's hard, but now the Willis thing, he's sitting there talking about spin access and spin rates. And I was picturing him more as the guy telling Cliff Lee to go out there and strike everybody out.
So I guess, you know, looking at 2019, holes that need to be filled. I think with the Kluber talk, what's kind of getting shuffled under the rug is the dumpster fire that is our bullpen. Perhaps we save it for another day. Let's do one quick thing on bullpen. Is there any hope to replenish this bullpen? We got Brad Hand. Let's go ahead. Mike, what are your thoughts on bullpen?
Oh, to replenish the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, a dumpster fire.
You know what? I have an idea. Like, maybe we shouldn't just collect a bunch of, like, ground ball guys who don't strike anybody out and have oscillating walk rates. You know what? Maybe go sign the guy who throws 99 and see if you can get him to throw strikes, because I'm really sick of, like, and I think they're doing a lot better job of, like, collecting talent that has a higher ceiling in terms of, like, higher velo. And I know people – velo – I'm really bad at talking. Velo is important. It just is now. Like Dan Otero is just not a valuable modern reliever. He's not. He just logs innings in the middle. You hope he gets lucky for 2 years and gets the right ground balls. But, like, when you're in high-leverage situations, you need people who can strike guys out. That comes with either really wonky arm release points or it comes with high-end velocity. It's not hard. So, you know, maybe the Indians should deal with that. I don't know. And hopefully Danny Salazar's arm can stay on for 2 more years, because that dude is so damn special. And I know we're supposed to act like we don't rely, but he pitched 100 innings like 5 straight years, and he's somehow not reliable because he misses one full season. Michael Brantley, who has played one full season in the last 3 or 4, is somehow reliable.
That's our lawyer.
On that note, the birthday boys leaving the scene. All right.
You guys close out shop.
You know, you don't have to stick to the bullpen here, but you know, obviously the Indians have a lot of needs. I don't know about a lot of needs, but they have pretty much the same needs they had heading into last season, and now the potential of dealing away one of their starters. As it stands now, let's say that they can't find that right deal for Kluber. You know, what are the chances of them replenishing the outfield? What are the chances of them replenishing the bullpen and tinkering with a team that should be ready to, again, you know, with the central challenge for a playoff spot? And I mean, am I wrong in thinking with Lindor and J-Ram and in this rotation, even with or without Kluber, I mean, shouldn't we be contenders for the World Series? I mean, I know other teams are doing things, but, you know, I mean, what where are we at here? I mean, are we realistically going to be in that scenario that we're always in every offseason where the Indians just can't do anything?
Yeah. One of the biggest reasons you could talk me into a Kluber trade is I don't see any avenues to pursue to get an outfielder otherwise. The free agent market's weak. That's just the only way you can get a reliable outfielder, in my opinion. And like we said before, you'd have to really thread the needle. And if you don't thread the needle right, if you trade it for a big prospect package, then I'm going to be really sour on the deal. But as for the bullpen, I think there's something to be said for last year, Salazar was up in the air. This year, he's still up in the air, but I feel like there's a little bit more room to say, well, he's had that much time off. Who knows what he's going to be, but I feel like he's a better ticket heading into this season. And then Tristan McKenzie as a second-half bullpen piece, that is enticing as hell. I don't know where you come out on that. But
well, I mean, I've always, you know, especially with young guys, I love the David Price model of bringing a young guy up, using him in the pen to kind of get his feet wet, and you automatically have a high asset in the bullpen, and you have you can then get him ready to be a starter. I mean, the Cardinals have historically done this with all of their top-notch starters. If you go, you know, all the way through, you know, from the Wainwrights to, I mean, even a guy like Trevor Rosenthal was supposed to be a starter. They threw him in the pen for a year, and he ended up becoming their closer. So you never know what you end up with Tristan McKenzie. I think they have some interesting arms to be able to possibly do that with next year. And I think my faith in that actually happening, it's not like the Indians have done that before. So, you know, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk about Danny Salazar and thinking about the Kluber trade, I immediately thought to myself, how insane is it going to be if they trade Kluber and then immediately announce that Salazar is back in the rotation? I mean, these are the dumb things that I think I could see happening. And I say this understanding that I love the front office. This is a team that was in the World Series 2 years ago, but you and I both know it's feasible, but that's exactly what could happen. The Indians, historically, the outfield in their bullpen, they throw these 10-cent arms and they throw these 10-cent outfielders out here like it's some sort of market inefficiency. And I think we found out that you can't have holes like that because that killed us last year. I don't know. I mean, Salazar, I'm really high on Salazar every year. I get frustrated when people don't like him. But I don't know. I mean, such an unknown. I heard some crazy things about his head not being in the right place last year. And, you know, if that's true, I don't know. But it seems like they're counting on him in the pen. I don't know. We shall see. I don't know. As we head towards the winter meetings and we head towards, you know, actual movements being made, do you think this Eric Gonzalez trade at the very least was a signal that the Indians are, you know, poking the edges?
Yeah, and I also think it made a ton of sense to get rid of him because he wasn't going to be on the roster in April. I mean, he would have had to really impress this past summer, and he just didn't. He had a couple good weeks, and he turned into the guy that he always has been, never walks. If you can't walk, then you have no value. If you can't walk and you can't hit for power, like if that combination comes in, then value is really hard to find. I'll put it that way. So it's just a weird balance with him where he wasn't going to be on the roster. They give up a mid-level prospect and get back a low guy who probably doesn't hit it, but
they do at least have some interesting. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, take a flyer on these guys on minor league contracts that are, you know, 28, 29, 30 years old. It's another to take a flyer on these former top prospects that really haven't gotten a shot yet. And it seems like the Indians do have a few of those to look at next year. As we close up shop, I want to talk about three guys I mentioned earlier and potential for where they're going to be next year, whether it's in the Indians lineup or gone. Let's look at probably the guy that's going to get talked about the most, Jason Kipnis. I mean, obviously the Indians are going to try to move him. Obviously it's going to be really hard to do it. Where is he going to be playing Gage next year? With the Indians? Where with the Indians? Or are they going to find a way to move him? And one really quick caveat to that I want to throw out there is the only way to get rid of Kluber, I'm sorry, the only way to get rid of Kipnis is to attach him to a Kluber deal. And in doing so, limiting your return.
Yes. I don't see any way Kipnis is not on the Indians unless it's in that vehicle. I think he's going to be an outfielder because at this point you can't unload him. And I don't know if it's worth the Indians' time to pay somebody to take him off their hands. I think you have to just buckle up and hope for the best with him.
Is he playing the outfield? Is he playing the infield? Like what are we doing? Like, I've seen a lot of scuttlebutt about him potentially moving back to second base. I've seen a lot of scuttlebutt about him taking over for Michael Brantley. I mean, where the hell do you play him? Or does he become the most expensive bench player? I mean, do you get rid of Eric Gonzalez and replace him with Jason Kipnis?
I think you just try to coast in the outfield with him. We're at the point with Yandy Diaz where you just got to play him. And that point was 2 years ago, maybe, but there is no way that the Indians can sell anybody on the notion that Yandy Diaz doesn't deserve a spot in the infield more than Jason Kipnis. So I think it'd have to be in left field.
Yeah, so he's the next guy I wanted to talk to you about. You know, Yandy Diaz had that fairly consequential meeting with Francona last year with Francisco Lindor being the mediator in the meeting. Obviously, I think Yandy Diaz finds a spot in this lineup this year. Obviously, if you think Kipnis is in left, this puts J-Ram back at second base, which is probably his best position fielding-wise. And if he gets a spring there, it should be a lot of fun seeing him and Lindor side by side with J-Ram on his left side rather than his right side. Yandy Diaz full-time at third base. Bare minimum, that seems to me to be a fairly sizable upgrade overall to the Indians lineup heading into this season offensively. I mean, potential for Yandy Diaz is obviously high. And this is fairly obviously the right way they're going to go, right? Or are we going to end up throwing our laptops through the window again come April?
I don't even want to talk about his potential. I think his floor is high.
Right.
That's what I think is my favorite part about him, the player. I think he swings that bat well enough and has a good enough eye to keep it and plays a good enough third base to never put you in the position that Jason Kipnis did last May. It sounds ridiculous. Maybe Kipnis had – I don't want to dwell on Kipnis's struggles because he did bring it together and he was pretty decent the rest of the way. But Diaz is attractive because he's steady to me. And I think you can count on him to hit the ball and – maybe he won't hit for power as much.
But see, that's the thing. That's the upside of Yandy Diaz. You mentioned the high floor. I think a lot of people say low ceiling because he doesn't have the power. But we can talk about how hard his exit velocity all year long. And of course, coming with that, the ground ball percentage, which did dip a little bit this year. But wouldn't you agree that a full season of at-bats for Yandy Diaz might provide him the type of regular bats at the highest level that might lend him towards hearing enough from major league batters that we might start seeing that upside tilt up as he starts figuring out that he shouldn't swing down on the ball.
And you can see where that power comes into play. There was that series, I think it was Boston, where he just – and late in the regular season, where he just kind of uncorked for a minute. There's just something really attractive to me to seeing him get 200 at-bats consecutively to start the year. And if he doesn't hit, then maybe you have to find a different route to go. But that's never been a problem for him.
One final thing, and hopefully we can do this fairly regularly this offseason. But, we mentioned Tristan McKenzie and fairly high on him. Also, their other top 100 prospect that's moving up instead of down is Nolan Jones. And I think there's a lot of scuttlebutt about both of these guys. You can talk about Tristan McKenzie's, his frame and potential to get injured. And obviously the Indians were worried about him in several ways last year and sort of protected him. And Nolan Jones is sort of on the flip side of that, kind of skyrocketing through the system at this point. Both will be probably in the top 100 somewhere prospect ratings wise, with the season and this, as Mike mentioned, maybe sort of shifting the window forward a little bit. I think, is it a play for the Indians to maybe shuffle the future aside? And when I say the future, I say post 3 years from now and potentially deal both of these guys for maybe that thread the needle deal? And doesn't that make sense since we're still talking about a 3-year window?
Yeah, you'd have a lot harder. You'd have a lot harder of a time selling me on trading Nolan Jones. Guys that just rake like him compared to a frail starting pitcher. I love Tristan McKenzie, but there are legitimate concerns there. And as with anybody, there's legitimate concerns, but Nolan Jones to me is untouchable unless you get that type of guy who's like a Christian Yelich type. Like that's the only deal where I could ever see that making sense. And I know Yelich skyrocketed this year, but I'm talking about even where he was last year, just dependable outfielder with years of control.
But when you weigh, and again, I, you know, you don't have to oversell me on Nolan Jones. I think looking at the future of the Indians, you know, I mean, it's going to be a hard sell, you know, post Lindor, which is definitively 3 years from now, especially when you consider what the deals are going to look like here in the next month or so, when we see Machado and Harper and we start to realize that the kind of value that Francisco Lindor is going to have on the open market. I mean, I'm not saying you sell away the future, but wouldn't you try to, you know, wouldn't it be worth dealing him Nolan Jones and a Tristan McKenzie in a deal that could bring you back a potential all-star for the next 2 or 3 years to make sure we maximize this 3-year window? I mean, when you balance the weight of what Nolan Jones could be against what we could do in the next 3 years, don't you think it may tilt towards the let's make the move? I mean, especially when you talk PR, I think the PR of trading prospects is probably an easier sell than trading a Kluber. And again, I'm not going to make a move because of PR, but I think there's a lot of facets to dealing. And of course, getting back the return that a Kluber would get might not be the same. But I don't know. I mean, unless you think Nolan Jones is Francisco Lindor, and he might be, there might be that quality to him. I mean, don't you think that it's still worth taking a look at?
Of course it's worth looking at. I think everything's worth looking at. But that's not really a cop-out. There are some other young international pieces like your George Valera down there around that level where Nolan Jones almost gets into the territory for me of your next wave. And maybe he's a little older than those guys, but you got to be conscious of that as well. Like, you could sell me at last year on trading Francisco Mejia for a reliever. You could never sell me on trading Nolan Jones for a reliever right now. It would have to be some kind of controlled all-star outfielder or in that level of impact, for me at least.
Well, again, I think with any deal we're talking about this year for the Indians, unfortunately, we're dealing with the thread the needle deal. All right, Gage, I haven't written since the Indians won the World Series. Anything that you got coming up at WFNY? You know what? I'm going to throw everybody off. I'm going to write something before Thanksgiving, just one thing. I don't know what yet. I'll probably bitch about something, but anything you've got coming up in that head of yours? I haven't been around Slack much over the past few weeks. What do you got coming up?
I haven't written since the Indians lost in the playoffs, but I've been formulating a Trevor Bauer piece. I do want to talk about Trevor Bauer, maybe not with the usage tilt, like you said earlier in the podcast. I just want to touch on what makes him so effective. So look for that in the next week or so. I'm going to get to it. And I would think it'd be by Thanksgiving.
All right. Oh my gosh.
And wait, you're writing again?
I'm going to write one piece and then we'll see what happens after that.
4,000 words.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I think I might have one of those in me. I think I'm supremely frustrated right now with this team. I think at the end of this podcast, I think the one thing that is kind of insane to say, especially for a guy who grew up in the 70s and 80s of watching really bad Cleveland Indians teams, and is as hard as I tried to not dive into how boring this team was to watch last year on their run to the playoffs, they really were a difficult team to watch. And the fear I have is if you don't make moves, the kind of moves that make this team a legit World Series contender, because we spent a whole lot of time and a whole lot of podcasts last year, Gage, talking about, you know, let's get to the playoffs and yay, we're going to get to the playoffs. I don't know, man. I'm scared. And it might take me 4,000 words just to express that as I just did. I don't know, man. It's just hard. Like, we've been talking offhand about how hard it's been to even talk about the Indians at this point. And I'd like to say the Eric Gonzalez deal has changed that for me, but it hasn't, believe it or not. So I don't know, man. When I look to you guys to like talk me down, you're like way up. You're higher up in the tree than me. So I don't know, man. It's frustrating, and I think I'm, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just old.
Maybe.
You're not supposed to agree with that shit, dude. All right. On that note, we're going to close up shop. Check us out. Gage and I are sort of committing to have a piece done in the next week. Have a great day. Go Tribe.
Have a good night, everybody.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.